Hello and welcome to Juneau Afternoon on KTOO News Juneau. It's November 4th. We're here in Alaska's capital city. Today we'll talk with Melanie Shivens about the Mendenhall Loop and Glacier Highway projects. We'll hear about the UAS Drama Club's stage reading entitled Finding True North. Steve Langdon will give us a preview of Tuesday's Native American Heritage Month's lecture on spiritual connections and obligations. And we'll talk with Juneau's very own Anita Maynard-Losh, who will be directing Perseverance Theater's upcoming presentation of Treasure Island. Stay tuned.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The killing of a rare white moose in Nova Scotia, Canada, has sparked outrage by some Aboriginal groups who consider the animal sacred. Dan Karpinchuk reports.
In the wake of the killing, Nova Scotia's Aboriginal community held a ceremony to bless and rededicate the hide of the albino moose shot in September in Cape Breton. The hunters, who were not Aboriginal, were not aware that the white animals are considered sacred in Native spirituality. They posed with the hide for a photo that eventually made it to Facebook. Native leaders immediately protested. The hunters apologized to the local Mi'kmaq tribe and agreed to hand over the hide for a ceremony to honor the animal and dispel a curse. Some Native leaders, like Cheryl Maloney, say there should be a greater awareness in the non-Native community about Mi'kmaq culture.
This is just symbolic of the need for reconciliation we have within Canadian society. And I didn't know we were so far apart.
White moose are not legally protected, but are considered very rare. Government officials say the moose was probably a partial albino. This particular moose was known to have inhabited the region for several years and often been spotted by local people. Within the Mi'kmaq culture, killing the animal brings bad luck and misfortune. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
The Lac du Flambeau tribe has sent a letter to Wisconsin's governor supporting the Menominee Nation's proposal for an off-reservation casino. WXPR's Natalie Jablonski has more.
The Menominee plan has gained federal approval, but it's being held up by opposition from the Forest County Potawatomi and Ho-Chunk tribes. Joe Hunt is an off-reservation gaming consultant for Lac du Flambeau.
We are supportive of anything that is going to help tribal peoples. And we'd like to see the Menominee build that business because it will really help the tribe.
Governor Scott Walker says he won't approve the Menominee proposal until all of the state's 11 tribes support it. But Hunt says that's setting up a nearly impossible hurdle.
Based on the conversation and the discussions that are going on right now, it's a very high bar for the tribes to meet. It doesn't appear that the Potawatomi tribe is bending.
Hunt says it's too early to say how this controversy could affect Lac du Flambeau's plans for an off-reservation casino in Shelbyville, Wisconsin. Governor Walker is expected to make a decision on the Kenosha Casino this week. For National Native News, I'm Natalie Jablonski in Rhinelander, Wisconsin.
Tribes and environmental groups across the country celebrated National Bison Day over the weekend. Jim Kent has details.
At the turn of the 20th century, there were less than two dozen free-roaming bison, or buffalo, in the United States and some 1,100 on privately owned ranches and preserves. This compared to the 60 million that were estimated to have roamed the country prior to America's westward movement of the mid-1800s. Efforts by the New York Zoological Society and the American Bison Society helped save the animal from extinction. In recent years, the Intertribal Buffalo Council has assisted in returning the bison to 57 tribes that once depended on the animal for their survival. Susan Rickey has worked with the Intertribal Buffalo Council for years and founded the Museum of the American Bison in Rapid City.
The buffalo has been the most important focal point for their ceremonies, for their daily sustenance, for their creation stories, and then it went away. And so to have the buffalo back on tribal lands is a huge part of their culture, and it means everything.
Susan Rickey says she'd like people to think about the bison's ability to endure each time they see one.
The bison made it through the Ice Age, and it made it through nearly being exterminated down to just a few hundred animals, and now we have 450,000 buffalo in America today, and that's incredible.
Susan Rickey adds that, like the bison that are so much a part of their culture, Native Americans have also survived. For National Native News, I'm Jim Kent.
during this week in 1912, the Alaska Native Brotherhood was established during a meeting in Juneau, Alaska, to represent Native and civil rights. The organization, along with the later founded Alaska Native Sisterhood, also fought for land claims. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Hello, you're listening to Juneau Afternoon on KTOO News Juneau. I'm Joan Pardis, your Monday host. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show. He's at the board. As far as weather, rest of today is rain, snow level 600 feet, highs around 39, southeast wind 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tonight, rain in the evening, then rain showers late, lows around 38, southeast wind 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow, rain showers. Tomorrow night, numerous rain showers. And Wednesday, mostly cloudy, scattered rain showers. I'm not seeing snow in this forecast, but we'll update it at the end of the hour. So a couple of things. KTOO's used record CD and video sale is still going on. It continues until 5 p.m. tonight. It's at KTOO, which is located at Egan and Whittier. Okay, right into the show, we've got Mamani Shivens from Scheinberg and Associates here to talk a bit about what's going on. There's some public comment as far as transportation. We're going to start with the Glacier Highway Bicycle and Pedestrian Improvement Project public meeting. And what this is about is, do you bike, walk, or catch the bus between Walmart and the Western Auto area along Glacier Highway? If you do, they're looking for recommendations. So your input is needed. So, Melanie, tell me about the project.
Well, absolutely. This is the second round of public meetings. We had a first round in February. A bunch of folks came out and said and talked about some of the recommendations they had to improve the area. And so the engineers went back, DOT went back to the drawing boards, came up with some recommendations for that area. And, again, it's that area between the Glacier Highway area, looking at ways to make it more bikeable, more walkable, maybe have sidewalks continuously on both sides of the street so that people in that area can get through more easily, even if they're not in a car, if they're using a bike or walking and or catching the bus. And so the engineers are coming back with recommendations now, and they want to present it to anyone in that area that might be affected, that uses that area, that loves that area, that works there or lives there or goes to school in that area. And so we want to see you on tomorrow, Tuesday, November 5th, from 5:30 to 7:30 at the Greening Park Office Recreation Room. That's a building that's just behind or just near Santa Kahini Middle School, and that will give the folks to present the different options and give people a chance to have feedback on them before any construction moves forward.
Okay, and so 5:30 to 6 is an informal open house. Look at the drawings. 6 to 6:30 is the formal presentation, and then there's question and answers and discussions from 6:30 to 7:30. But, you know, that area is more than just the people who live in that area, because for the people who are biking from the valley, mm-hmm. it's a major thoroughfare. So, you know, you have so many different subsections of bike trails to get from the valley to downtown. And a lot of people do bike, even year-round. There's the people with the big, fat snow tires
exactly.
that are out there.
Exactly. No, that's exactly right. And the Glacier Highway was originally built to be the main highway for traffic through Juneau. And then in the 1970s, of course, Eakin Drive was built and to allow the distance at the higher speeds. And so now Glacier Highway is more compatible to function for local traffic and pedestrian and bicycle use. And if you want to bike or walk, you're not going to be on Eakin Drive. You're not allowed to be on Eakin Drive. So you're going to go through that area. So anytime you're going from town to the valley on bike or by running, you're going to go through that area. And so this is just a way to make it safer, to make it nicer, to make it function better for what it's being used for now rather than how it was originally set up when it was built so long ago.
So this is a DOT project, but they hired Scheinberg and Associates and Kittleson and Associates to get all the data. Is that correct?
That's right. Scheinberg Associates, we're a part of the team. We're a part of communications and outreach, making sure that people know about the meetings and get to the meetings and help document what the public has to say and make sure that everybody's voice is heard.
Okay. So this meeting tonight, is it just reporting out, or are they still taking public comment?
They are absolutely still taking public comment. Thanks so much for saying that. Yeah, so they're reporting out of their recommendations, and they really are looking for feedback. What do people think? Is this what they heard from the first round of meetings? Did they get it right? And if they didn't, how can they change it slightly to make sure, or what do they need to tweak to make sure that they have it right? So there's going to be three recommendations tonight, three different corridor improvement
tomorrow night.
Thank you. Yes.
Tuesday,
November 5th at 5:30 at the Greening Park Recreation Room.
Okay. Now we're going to move on to project number two, which is the Mendenhall Loop Road Capacity Improvement Project. So what's that all about?
Okay, well, this is slightly different because it is the first round of projects, and so we're looking for anyone who uses the Mendenhall Loop Road between Nancy Street and the intersection with the Back Loop Road. So there's just so many businesses and homes and types of uses we have there. The goals of this project are to provide adequate vehicle capacity and improve bicycle and pedestrian facilities in the study area. So we've got, you've got schools there, you've got churches, you've got homes, and basically there's more vehicles using that area of Mendenhall Loop Road than it was originally designed for. It's hard to turn on. It's hard to turn off.
Right. And anybody who's been there at 7:45 or at anywhere from 2:30 to 3:30 between Floyd Dryden and Glacier Valley, there's a lot of traffic going through there. And there's kids and there's bikes, and it's just a very congested area.
And there's drop-off spots. The buses are dropping people off and picking people up. There's the crosswalks aren't necessarily placed in the best way to get people across the street safely and easily. And so this is what they're looking at improving.
Okay. And so this is the first round, so they're looking for input. And this is Wednesday. So this is Mendenhall Loop Road between Nancy Street and the intersection with Back Loop Road. So that's kind of from near Stephen Richards, a little further than Stephen Richards, all the way down to the Back Loop Road. So that's tomorrow night, Wednesday, November 6th, from 5:30 to 7:30. This is at Floyd Dryden, and it's from 5:30 to 7:30. And once again, it's the same format, 5:30 to 6, an informal open house, look at the drawings, 6 to 6:30 is the presentation, and then input and questions and answers. Is that correct, Melanie?
That's right. And, what we'll have there is we'll have an enormous map of the area, and we'll ask everyone to just come and write up the problem areas, draw them on the map. Where do you have problems turning? Where do you want that crosswalk to be? Where do your kids cross that road to get to school? Are you a child care facility? What needs do you have? Do you go to church on Sunday morning? Are you having trouble getting out of that parking lot when church is over? So we'll have people just absolutely draw their concerns, write their problems down, and that'll give the engineers and DOT a lot to work with.
What if people can't attend the meetings, but they want to share their comment? Is there some place that they could send an email or phone call?
Absolutely. Anytime that anyone wants to share their comments, we are setting up a project website. It is not live and ready to go, but if you want to send an email to me, Melanie Shivens, M. Shivens at SheinbergAssociates.com. That's M-S-C-H-I-J-V-E-N-S at SheinbergAssociates.com. And we'll get the word out to make it easy for folks to submit those comments.
Okay, so here we are. You're in two different phases of these two different projects. The Walmart area access is in round two. The Mendenhall Loop Road is in stage one. So you're gathering public comment. What's the rough timeline of when things will actually possibly start to change?
So sure. So this is, like you said, this process that we're in, and then it's going to go to the environmental process, engineering and design. That'll be in over the next year, that the whole engineering piece and design piece and environmental process will happen. And then in 2015, it'll go out for contractor selection, and there'll be construction in 2015.
Okay. So that's, you know, even though that sounds really far, this is the beginning of a two-year process is what you're talking about.
Right. And so often people see the construction and say, well, but I want to have some input. I want to say my piece, and this is the time now to come in. The construction's 2 years down the line, but this is the time now to make your voices heard, because you can have a big impact on the project if you're a main user of that area.
That sounds great. So with a quick wrap-up, the Glacier Highway Bike and Pedestrian Improvement Project, that meeting is Tuesday, November 5th, from 5:30 to 7:30 in the Greening Park Recreational Room. And then the Mendenhall Loop Road, that's from Nancy Street to Back Loop Road, that's Wednesday, November 6th, at Floyd Dryden, the middle school, from 5:30 to 7:30. Thank you so much for coming in today.
That is exactly right. Thank you so much for having me. And I look forward to seeing everyone at these meetings.
That sounds great.
On the road again. I just can't wait to get on the road again. The life I love is making music with my friends. And I can't wait to get on the road again. That I've never been, seeing things that I may never see again. I can't wait to get on the road again. Everybody say, on the road again. I stand the distance as we go down the highway. The best of friends, it's a sin that the world keeps turning out. Making music with my friend. I can't wait to get on the road again.
Okay, we're back. You're listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO News Juno. I'm Joan Partis, your Monday host. Jeff Brown's at the board. He's the producer and engineer of the show. It is 3:17 p.m. And in the studio right now, we have Brian Crowder, who is the student director of the UAS Drama Club. And if that sounds new, it's because it is. And Jonas Lab, who is the public service librarian at UAS. So the Drama Club is called Script, Students for the Creation, Reading, Interpretation, and Production of Theater. And this will be, they have a first stage reading happening Wednesday night. And the club is not only open to actors, I understand, it's for all.
It's for the entire community, yes. Our main goal is to be able to incorporate the community at UAS and the community at Juno at large. So it'd be great to have as many people from the community coming and supporting UAS as possible.
In their first venture.
Yes, our first venture. It should be a lot of fun. We have some great pieces from Kidja's book, and it's going to be great, and we're really excited to be able to participate in part of Kidja's tour here in
cool.
Juneau.
We're going to get into her tour in a second, but the name of the evening is Finding True North, is that
That's correct?
Correct? And
yeah.
It's a stage reading of four different pieces.
Mm-hmm.
How many people are in the drama club?
There are currently 10 of us right now, and everybody who started the year we've retained, so we have a good retention rate at the moment, which is great, and everybody is really committed, and it's great to have that kind of attitude coming in every week and being there beyond the standard 2-hour meetings for our club, and then doing the additional 6 to 12 hours of rehearsals on the weekends, and getting all this extra time in, it takes a lot of commitment, especially with full loads at the university. It takes a lot, and so it's great to see how many dedicated people that we have there.
That sounds great. So let's talk about the who, what, where, and when. We talked about the who. It's Finding True North. It's a stage reading. It's the first outing of the UAS Drama Club. But what time is it, and where is it, and what day is it?
It will be next Wednesday, November 6th at 8 p.m., and tickets at the door for community members will be $10 and $5 for students.
Okay. Just to be clear, on my piece of paper here, I have 7 p.m.
It changed
to
8 p.m. There was actually a conflict with another class, so we needed to reschedule. So it's 8 o'clock, yes, 8 o'clock.
And where is it?
It's in Hendrickson Building, the Hendrickson Theater, and it's room 113, Hendrickson 113. And it's got a nice stage there, and we got some nice lighting going on. It's very pretty down there. So that'll be our typical place for all of our theatrical performances at the university.
Has that space been used before?
It has been. We've done a couple of play production classes at the university. They're directed by Shona Strouser for the last 2 years, and we've performed twice there in the last 2 years. And so it is somewhat familiar to the community, people who have gone there before. It's really very nice in the sort of corner of the building stage. It's very cozy, and it's very fun. So
that sounds great. Okay, so that's Wednesday night, this Wednesday, November 6th at 8 at the Hendrickson Theater at UAS. News to me, which is pretty exciting, which is great. So, Jonas, tell me about this author that they, the drama club, is doing stage reading of some of her pieces.
Sure. First, let me just throw out there that the Hendrickson stage, for those of you that are kind of unfamiliar with the UAS campus, if you come into the first entrance, the first campus entrance, now called the service entrance near Fritz Cove, and park in the parking lot at the end of that road, the building is right across the street from the parking lot. Look for signs, and we'll be directing people probably, if you're able-bodied, down the stairs to the lower level. Otherwise, I believe you can go in at the main level and take an elevator downstairs.
That sounds great. Thank you for doing that. So let's talk a little bit about the pieces that they'll be doing and your involvement with the author.
Sure. So Kij Johnson is the author of At the Mouth of the River of Bees, which is a short story collection that has been chosen by UAS to be the One Campus, One Book selection for 2013. One Campus, One Book is part of, it's a program we're in our fourth year, and the goals of the program is to sort of build community on campus and then in the greater Juneau community around a shared reading experience. So a committee of staff and faculty at the university, we begin with, sort of a broad theme and begin to develop some potential titles for that, and then we go out and pull the student body, the community, and we come to a book, which every attendee at New Student Orientation receives a free copy of that book, and then the committee members work with faculty to integrate this title into their curriculum. So we have about 9 classes this semester that are teaching either a story or the book in its entirety, and it's definitely a departure from some of the previous year's selections that have been predominantly memoirs by male authors, and we've sort of took an intentional detour and chose a female author writing speculative fiction that's kind of pushes the envelope. Some of it seems very ordinary until it's not. And we thought that the short story format would have a lot more flexibility in working it into the curriculum. And we thought it would definitely be more engaging for the student body. The story is kind of our edgy, which I think might be a reflection of our UAS community.
And so that's a perfect first stage reading for the Drama Club. That makes perfect sense. So they're going to be reading 4 of those stories.
Yeah, we'll be reading 4 of the stories. Ponies is one, and the second one is My Wife the Solitaire, which is kind of this transformation story of this husband's wife into a solitaire bird, and it's really entertaining. She ends up having a little bit of an affair with the vicar, and it's very fun to watch. It all happens right behind his back directly. I don't want to give too much of the stories away.
No, don't give it.
But basically, the 4 stories were chosen because they all, in a way, lead into each other. They tell a story on their own, put together, kind of this the hegemony throughout our society and why we do things without asking, and especially in the beginning, that's really apparent, especially with ponies. Just the way that the story starts, this is the way things are, just laying down the societal standards. Like, this is how things are, and it's absolutely crazy what the standards are. I don't want to give it away. It has to do with cutting ponies. But
I think I'm going to have to get this book. So wait a second. So she's actually going, the author is actually going to be at the reading. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, and is she doing other things while she's in town?
Yeah, she'll be on campus as part of One Campus, One Book. So, it's ideal that we're able to bring the author to campus, so it's not a requirement of the program. But so Kij will be on campus Wednesday through Friday, and then she's also doing a community fiction writing workshop at the Douglas Public Library on Saturday. But the big event will be an evening at Egan lecture on Friday night, where she'll be doing a reading and talking about kind of the overall theme is human-animal communication after the change.
Oh, wow.
And change is sort of this concept that she's developed in her story about when animals develop language.
Okay, and she's coming on the show where there'll be more information on that on Wednesday, is
that's
that correct?
Correct.
So
yeah.
We're going to focus on the drama club right now,
go
and then Kij could be talking for herself on Wednesday.
Absolutely.
So you definitely want to tune in 3:00 on Wednesday. So that sounds great. So once again, the UAS's new drama club, they're having their first stage reading Wednesday, November 6th. If you're not a student, it's $10. If you are a student, it's $5. It's at the Henderson Theater, which is one of the first buildings if you're coming in from the Fritz Cove Way, Fritz Cove entrance, and it's at 8:00. So thanks, guys, for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for the chance,
Joan.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday. It's the 4th of November, 2013. It's the birthday of the poet C.K. Williams, born in Newark, 1936, grew up in a poor family, went to college to play basketball, took an English course, decided to write poems. He was Jewish, but he hadn't heard of the Holocaust until he was in his early 20s. His parents had hidden all of that from him. And then he went to work on a long poem focused on Anne Frank. He said, "After the Anne Frank poem, I seemed to be able to write poems I wanted to write in a way that satisfied me, that made the struggle with the matter and form and surface of the poems bearable and, more to the point, purposeful." A Day for Anne Frank became the first poem in his first book, entitled Lies, which came out in 1969. C.K. Williams, famous for writing poems with very long lines, longer than would fit on the page. Williams said, "I have three grandsons who, of course, are above average, way above average, needless to say, and when I'm with them, I feel a sort of primeval hope. Their vibrance, their optimism, the way they're so firmly in the world without thinking about it. When I'm not with them and I think about the world, I am not in a very hopeful mood." It's the birthday of the humorist Will Rogers, born near Ulloga, Oklahoma, 1879, son of a successful rancher. He became a Broadway showman, Hollywood actor, public speaker, radio commentator, newspaper columnist. For 13 years, it was the most widely read column of its day. Will Rogers, who said, "Too many people spend money they don't have to buy things they don't want to impress people they don't like." He said, "Everyone is ignorant only on different subjects. Good judgment comes from experience, and a lot of that comes from bad judgment." He said, "When you're through learning, you're through." And Will Rogers said, "When you find yourself in a hole, quit digging." And it was on this day in 1918, the poet Wilfred Owen was killed in World War I at the age of 25, just a week before the war came to an end. Here's a poem for today by C.K. Williams, entitled Droplets. Even when the rain falls relatively hard, only one leaf at a time of the little tree you planted on the balcony last year, then another leaf at its time, and one more is set trembling by the constant droplets. But the rain, the clouds flocked over the city, you at the piano inside, your hesitant music mingling with the din of the downpour, the gush of rivulets loosed from the eaves, the iron railings and flowing gutters, all of it fuses in me with such intensity that I can't help wondering why my longing to live forever has so abated that it hardly comes to me anymore, and never as it did as regret for what I might not live to live, but rather as a layering of instants like this, transient as the mist drawn from the rooftops, yet emphatic as any note of the nocturne you practice. And the storm faltering, fading into its own radiant passing, you practice again. Droplets, a poem by C.K. Williams from his collected poems published by Ferrer, Strauss, and Giroux, and used by permission here on The Writer's Almanac. Produced by Joy Biles, with assistance from Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Theater in the Rough presents The Ladies of the Camellias by Lillian Grogue. It's about two divas and a Russian anarchist in a theater in Paris in 1897. Hijinks ensue. On stage now in McPheeters Hall, 4th and Gold downtown, this PG-13-esque comedy shows weekends, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday at 7:30 till November 23rd, with two Sunday matinees, November 17th and 24th at 2. Tickets are at all the bookstores, at the Jack, at the Door, and online at theaterintherough.org.
Hello, you're listening to Juno Afternoon. It's 3:31. I'm Joan Pardis. I'm your Monday host, Jeff Brands of the board. He's the engineer and producer. Speaking of PG-13, we were just talking to the UAS New Drama Club, and that stage reading on Wednesday is not for youngsters. It's for mature audiences, so 18-plus would be a good idea for that show, as well as PG-13 for the Theater in the Rough show. So Sealaska Heritage Institute is sponsoring a lecture series in honor of Native American Heritage Month. This year, all the lectures will focus on the theme spirituality. Professor of Anthology Steve J. Langdon from University of Alaska Anchorage will give the talk tomorrow, Tuesday, November 5th at 1 p.m. at the Sea Alaska Plaza. It's in the boardroom on the fourth floor. It's free and it's open to the public. And Steve Langdon's on the phone with us to talk about his talk tomorrow. So hello, Steve. How are you?
I'm doing quite well. Thank you.
Thank you. So can you tell us a little bit about the talk that you'll give tomorrow?
The title of the talk is Spiritual Connections and Obligations, the Foundation of Tlingit Existence. I agreed to this talk while recognizing with great humility and acknowledgement that my understandings of this topic are limited, and I want to acknowledge those at the outset. And I want to say that I'm really so wonderfully dependent upon all of the elders who have taught me and provided me with experiences and understandings to undertake a discussion of this very important topic. It's very important because it recognizes the absolute centrality of underlying spiritual connectedness, which the Tlingit plan of existence is built upon. And by spiritual connectedness, I want to emphasize the crucial underpinnings that are demonstrated in such aspects of Tlingit belief and oral tradition as one finds in the discussions of Yeh or Raven and his role in the transformation of the world into its relatively present form, and also a set of mythic traditions. Through these fundamental core beliefs, which are the equivalent of the biblical beliefs of Christianity, Tlingits understand some very different kinds of relationships that occupy the world than is normally accepted in the Western Christian or scientific traditions. The first of these is that all phenomena, living and non-living, are inhered with and have immanent within them a spiritual presence. And that spiritual presence is fundamentally sentient. That is, it's attending to phenomena. And furthermore, and those phenomena that they may be attending to include the actions of human beings. Now, a second principle that's very important from the raven stories, especially the stories of the initial transformations, is that things are not what they seem necessarily. There is a deep transformation, so that what you in fact see as a salmon or a tree has a deep spiritual essence. And most importantly, that spiritual essence, sometimes referred to as personhood, is the same as yours. So they can be called persons. And what underlies then that particular belief is that one has expectations towards those other living forms and phenomena in the same way that one builds relations and expectations with other human beings. So these other forms have similar qualities. This is quite different from the fundamental cleavage in Western science that grows out of biblical characterizations of men as the superior, meaning Homo sapien as the superior form endowed by God with the power to control and direct these other phenomena. So what we have is two very, very different ways of approaching the world, of living with the world, and the essence of that spirituality is similar to yours. They're not deaf and dumb and mute animals. They are spiritual forms with whom one must relate. And I'll break here and talk a little bit more about those relationships if I have time.
Yeah, absolutely. What you're saying is fascinating, that it seems that what you're saying is that the Native Americans of Southeast Alaska and the Northwest, while, you know, the Western culture, and while you look at all the different fairy tales, let's say, from Europe, where the wilderness was scary and it was spooky and it was, maybe animals weren't so smart and that men were smarter than the animals, it seems like what you're talking is about a different, completely different worldview.
Well, it's absolutely totally different. At the fundamental basis, there is equality of personhood, and in that, equality of the right to exist. So that existence is also, first of all, interconnected in the sense that relationships must exist. And secondly, it's interdependent, and these relationships are reciprocal. By reciprocal, I mean there is an underlying thematic of respect shown by both, by humans to other forms and those other forms to humans, and reciprocal gifting, which is that the ways that you sustain relationships among human beings is through respectful giving and through relationships which are reciprocal. One must, and this is the foundation of existence going forward. You must act in a ritually and spiritually respectful manner, carry out appropriate rituals, and through these particular steps, one can't ensure, but one makes the best steps towards ensuring that the future will reappear. And just let me say that, here, let me add to this thematic, which is we see this most dramatically, first of all, in the manner in which traditional Tlingit approach human life, and human life, the term that I use is it cycles between the domains of this existence and the domain of what might call the plane of death, where spirits go. So at the point of death, the spiritual essence is transmitted through fire. So Tlingits cremated their human forms, everyone except the shaman, traditionally, to free the spirit so that it could be reincarnated. So what we have is a cycling of human spirits, so that within each of the Tlingit clans, ancestral spirits return in the form of their names, and the obligations of the present population are to ensure through those ritual actions that those ancestral beings will continuously be able to exist in this world.
Wow, that sounds absolutely fascinating. So if you're just joining us, that we're talking with Professor of Anthropology Steve J. Langdon from the University of Alaska Anchorage. He's coming down to Juneau tomorrow to give a talk, part of Sea Alaska Heritage Institute's lecture series honoring Native American Heritage Month. This year, all the lectures will focus on the theme spirituality. And as you could hear from Professor Langdon, it sounds like it's going to be a fascinating talk. It's tomorrow at noon to 1 at the Sea Alaska Plaza in the boardroom on the fourth floor. It's free and it's open to the public. Professor Langdon, thank you so much for giving us a little preview. I think we should all get there tomorrow and hear more. Thank you so much for joining us.
All right. Thank you very much.
This is Bird Note. They had been gone from the island for 100 years. But in 1973, Dr. Stephen Kress reintroduced 6 Atlantic puffin chicks to Eastern Egg Rock, an island in Maine's Muskangas Bay. He nurtured them by leaving fish in their underground burrows. A few weeks later, the birds fledged, departing at night for the open sea. Knowing puffins return to the spot where they fledge, he and his team waited. For 4 years, no puffins returned. Here's Dr. Kress.
So in 1977, I began trying to think more like a puffin, and I began to try to imagine what it must be like for a puffin that would head off to sea, come back, and find no other puffins at the island. And of course, there hadn't been any puffins for 100 years, so what would this puffin think? Would it even take a chance about coming ashore? And I began to realize that normally a young puffin coming home would find other puffins. It would be attracted to them, perhaps interact with them, and become comfortable at that location. And I was concerned that maybe some of my puffins were coming back but not coming ashore. And that's when I decided that I would try to put out some decoys.
The decoys worked. Now the island, with much continuing work by Dr. Kress and Project Puffin, is home to more than 100 nesting pairs. There's much more about Project Puffin's groundbreaking work at birdnote.org.
Hello, you're listening to Juneau Afternoon on November 4th. It's 3:42 p.m. I'm Joan Pardis, your Monday host. Jeff Brown is at the board. He's the producer and engineer. And in the studio with me right now is Anita Maynard-Losh. Anita is directing the play Treasure Island at Perseverance Theater, which previews on Friday. Many of you know that she was the associate director of Perseverance many years ago. Right now, she's the director of community engagement for the Arena Stage in Washington, D.C. She leads the theater's education and outreach program. She also directs the Camp Arena Stage, the theater's multi-arts summer camp, and the Arena Stage Academy. In her spare time, she comes to Alaska to direct Treasure Island. Also, Anita trained and taught at the American Conservatory Theater in San Francisco and was on the faculty at Webster University in St. Louis, and she's head the department at UAS, the drama department there. So, hi, Anita. Welcome back to Juneau.
It's great to be here.
So, what brought you back?
Well, Art Roach gave me the opportunity to come back and direct 10 seasons after the last regular season I directed here, because I left in the 2003-2004 season was the last regular season I directed, so it's been a great homecoming. He gave me the opportunity, and Molly Smith, of course, the founder of Perseverance Theater and now artistic director at Arena Stage, was generous enough to allow me also the time to come up and work on the show.
Okay, so if you come in and direct a show, how long does that take?
Well, the actual rehearsal process is 6 weeks long, but of course, months and months before that, you are involved in design meetings for the set and casting and all of the pre-work that happens before the actors come into the room.
And also immersed in your own thought process about what you're going to do, how are you going to present it, how are you going to put your spin on it, your stamp on it. So how has it been living in Pirate Land?
It's been pretty wonderful. I had read Treasure Island as a child, the book, the Robert Louis Stevenson's original, and Ken Ludwig, who did this adaptation, actually has done a lot of work at Arena Stage, so I've met him, and he is a terrific playwright. So his adaptation of this great book is really, really exciting. And so one of the cool things about it is that there are a lot of sword fights and a lot of very dramatic moments. And I think that all of the actors that are working in the show have multiple roles, or most of them have multiple roles. And so it's been very exciting to see them jump in with both feet and work through the different characters that they have and also train on this amazing stage combat that they do.
Okay. So is this adaptation, Ken Ludwig's adaptation, is it new? Is it a new adaptation?
It's just been in the last few years, so it's relatively new. And it's been performed, it's been produced in England, and it's been produced, I think, at the Alley Theater in Texas and on the East Coast, at least one place.
So that's pretty exciting. So Perseverance is, Juno's getting a glimpse of something that is pretty new in
fairly
the theater
new,
world. Yeah.
That's right, yeah.
So let's talk about the stage fighting. How do you train actors to do the demanding work of stage fighting and make it believable in such an intimate space?
Yes, that is a big challenge. We had a wonderful fight choreographer come down from Fairbanks, Jessica Jacob, and she actually worked with the actors over the first weekend of rehearsals, which is very early in the rehearsal process. So she was actually choreographing fights that take place in scenes that hadn't been staged yet. So, of course, there was some adapting that needed to happen once the show is staged, but she is tremendously talented. And so we have cutlass fighting and dagger fighting and marauder knife fighting, plus there are, hand-to-hand and fisticuffs and pistols and muskets. And I mean, it's a very, very, very fight-heavy show. And what she does is really work with the actors to be safe, to be able to work together as a team or sometimes as an ensemble in some of the bigger fights, and then to work through every single moment slowly so that when they put those moments together, they can move up to fight speed for the show.
Right, right. And then, we're so used to, I'm thinking of the stuff that I read about Lord of the Rings, about Viggo Mortensen and how he jumped in and learned all this stuff, lost a tooth, super glued it back, and, all this kind of crazy stuff. So I'm assuming it's a much slower pace.
Yes,
over there.
I think so. Yes.
And then I want to ask, because as you're describing this, it sounds like a great theater experience for kids because there's so much action and there's so much fighting and it's definitely age appropriate for the whole family. Can we talk about the themes that will grab the adults as well?
Yes, but one caveat I'd like to say is that there is a lot of sword fighting, and so if you have a very, very small child, it could be scary for them. So I would just take that into consideration before you bring your sensitive toddler to the show.
Right. Like you should really think about your own child.
Your
and
own
that
child.
This
what,
is not
what
the TV screen. This is,
No, they're right up there. They're right up there. And the real blades clanging and, a lot of stage violence. Of course, nobody actually gets hurt, but sometimes for little tiny kids, they can't tell the difference. So that would be my only little bit of a warning. I think the thing that grips adults is the relationship between the two main characters, Jim Hawkins, who's a fatherless 14-year-old boy, and Long John Silver, the infamous pirate. What's really the heart of the play is that relationship, the relationship between this young boy who needs a father figure, this pirate who is at best a morally ambiguous character, and how they find each other and find a relationship that is important to both of them, which was having a morally ambiguous character like that in the time of Robert Louis Stevenson was writing this book was hugely unusual for children's literature and actually pretty unusual today. So I think that we learn from that that Jim Hawkins learns and we learn that sometimes you can love someone and not approve of the things that they do. And I think that's a fairly adult kind of concept.
Right. And also it's interesting when you say morally ambiguous in the world of black and white, where, mm-hmm. you know, you have the villains like Lord Voldemort.
Right.
No, where there's no gray area.
That's right.
It's all black. And then you have the good people like Harry Potter, if we're mm-hmm. going to use that analogy, where, you know, there's not, they're very much archetypes, you know, so archetypes.
That's right,
so
that's right.
It's interesting that you have a very interesting protagonist. Well, I'm not sure if it's a lead, it's a character.
It's one of the leading characters, and of course so much of what we think of as being pirate lore or our images of pirates didn't exist before Treasure Island. I mean, Treasure Island, the book, was the first time that we heard about a seafaring man with one leg with a parrot on his shoulder. It was the first real treasure map where X marked the spot that Yo-Ho-Ho in a bottle of rum, the song, Robert Louis Stevenson wrote those words. That these are become iconic images and iconic ideas around what we think of as pirates when we just have that, you know, immediate hit of what a pirate is. But that when he wrote it, it was quite unique and quite unusual. So all of that makes it a very interesting project because, of course, since his ideas were unique, how do you work with those iconic ideas and yet make real people who want real things in this amazingly swashbuckling and adventurous world, but still basically have human desires and human relationships and care about things that maybe most of us care about.
Yeah, wow, that sounds really layered.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have your action adventure, you have big themes, you have, it just sounds great. You said something, I have a couple more questions and then we'll run out of time, but you said there's the 14-year-old character.
Mm-hmm.
So who is playing? Do you have a 14-year-old playing a 14-year-old?
No, Erin Abella, who graduated from JDHS last May, is actually 18, but he plays the 14-year-old. And he is so endearing and wonderful, and he really takes us through the play. It's his story, and it's how he remembers this story. And so he's in every scene but the very first prologue scene. So he has an amazingly complicated and huge role to carry off, and he does it really beautifully. And you care about him, and you love him. And I think that's so important, and it's pretty amazing to have someone even that young as 18-year-old to be able to pull that off, and he does it with grace.
Right, to carry a show and be mm-hmm. in every scene, that's huge. How many local people are in the show, and how many do we have from out of town? Because I know Perseverance likes to mix the local talent with some talent from out of town.
Most of them are local. There are probably four that are from out of town. Mm-hmm. Some of the actors I've worked with before, which has been a lot of fun, and even one that's from out of town, Dan Rayome, used to live here and grew up here, but now is an actor in Seattle. So he came up to be in the show. And so it's been fun to have some people that I have had a decades-long relationships with, and then brand new people that have just either just recently appeared on the theater scene here or who have appeared on the theater scene here long ago, but I wasn't here to notice it. So, we have some great, great, great actors in the play.
Okay, if you're just joining us, I'm Joan Partis. You're listening to Juno Afternoon. I'm talking to Anita Maynard-Law. She is directing Treasure Island, Perseverance Theater's Treasure Island, rendition of Treasure Island. It opens on Friday. So, Anita, how has it been for you to be back in Juno?
It's been really wonderful to be back in Juno, and you know, Juno is such a terrific community, and one thing that my husband Toby Clark and I both say all the time is that there really isn't a way to have these kinds of community relationships in that large community of D.C., the metro D.C. area, in the same way as you can have here in Juno, and some of our strongest relationships are still with people in Juno. So that's been a real treat for me to be able to meet people again that I hadn't seen for a few years or haven't been able to spend much time with. And although I'm in rehearsal a lot, I have been able to sneak away and get some time with old friends and just to experience this beautiful town and the community that is so supportive of each other here.
That's great. And I want to move back to Treasure Island. Okay, we talked about you and Juno. Now I want to go back to your task at hand.
Mm-hmm.
Did you always want to do a pirate show? Is this your first pirate show? You've directed a lot of things.
Well, it actually is not my first pirate show. My first pirate show was for the Juno Lyric Opera, and it was Pirates of Penzance, and that was 20 years ago. But what's also kind of a nice inner unity is that Art Roach, the artistic director, current and artistic director at Perseverance Theater, was also at Perseverance Theater then, and he actually designed the set for that production of Pirates of Penzance, and he's designed the set for Treasure Island. So that's really that's been kind of a homecoming as well. Mm-hmm. It's a coming of age story, and I think in so many ways I came of age as an artist at Perseverance Theater that it has a lot of meaning for me just to be able to do this play at this time in this place.
Oh, that sounds great. Anita, thank you so much for joining us today. So once again, Perseverance Theater's Treasure Island opens this Friday. Anita Maynard-Losh is the director. I assume that after the show opens, you'll probably go back to your home.
Yeah, the next day, I have to go.
Usually what happens, the directors get kicked out after they get the show going. And how long does the show run for?
It opens on Friday, November 8th, and it runs through December 8th.
Okay, great. And I would go and get your tickets.
Get your tickets, because we had such a huge crowd just at the preview last night that they weren't expecting. So evidently there is a little bit of a buzz already. So please, yes, get your tickets. Don't miss it.
That sounds great. And also, just let's go back to Anita's caution that if your child is sensitive to violence, it's going to be upfront and close. And of course, it's all stage fighting, mm-hmm. but they don't have the distance of the screen as far as.
Yeah, and you know your own child. You know what mm-hmm. your own child is sensitive to. And we just want to make sure that it's the appropriate level of excitement and not an inappropriate level of excitement for the young ones.
That sounds great. Thank you again for coming in.
Thank you for asking.
Thanks.
As you remember from last episode, Luke Radio Talker was mouth-to-mouth, ear-to-ear with public media listeners across the globe, urgently extolling them to become members. Let's join him now.
I've tried everything, Yoda, reminding them how critical their donation is, how little time it takes. I've even talked about the great thank you gifts. What can I do?
Use the phone, Luke. Use the phone.
Hello, KTO. May I please take your donation?
Call now, 586-3636 or 1-800-478-3636 or go online to ktuo.org.
Hello, we are wrapping up Juno Afternoon. It's 3:56 on November 4th. You've been listening on KTOO News Juno. If you want to listen to this show or any other show anytime, go to ktoo.org and you can pull things up and listen online. Okay, weather tonight, rain showers mixing with snow at times in the Mendenhall Valley with little or no accumulation. Temperatures steady around 37. Tomorrow, rain showers. Tomorrow night, rain showers likely, lows around 37. Wednesday, cloudy, scattered rain showers, highs around 43. Wednesday night, mostly cloudy, scattered rain showers, lows around 35. Thursday is mostly cloudy, and Thursday night through Saturday is mostly cloudy, chance of rain, highs around 40, lows around 33. Thanks for joining us. Have a great day. All Things Considered is next.
This is KTOO Juno. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juno and Douglas. We rebroadcast on translators K276 AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, K269 AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creeks, K201 AM in Gustavus, K220 BT in Hoonah, and K210 AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. In Juno, KTOO is on GCI Cable, on digital channel 871. We're also online at ktoo.org. Support for national programming on KTOO comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you.
You're in the KTOO studio with Scott Burton, Joan Pardis, and Cheryl Snyder here.
Hi,
at the
Scott.
Top of the hour. How are you two tonight?
We're doing great.
Very good.
Yeah, and Joan, great to have you here. You've been volunteering now for several months, filling in on a Juno afternoon. It's been great. You've been doing a great job at the program. You're very personable. You ask really good questions and create a really nice conversation. So I really enjoy your Monday program. Thanks for the volunteer hours that you're putting in. The three of us are here as a part of your All Things Considered this evening because today is the first day of the fall on-air membership campaign, but we have been raising money for a couple months now. Many of you chose to become sustaining members, so your membership in the station is automatically renewed. And many of you who are not sustainers did opt to pledge during our Quiet Drive campaign, and that's fantastic. So we are off to a great start today. We've had a lot of activity, a lot of people making their contribution, and we want to give a big thanks to all of them. And we look forward to hearing from you tonight. For those of you who made your last contribution to the station a year ago, it is time to renew. And if you've never given to public radio before, there's no better time than the present. Give us a call at 586-3636.
That's right. We have folks from the Juneau City Douglas Museum answering phones, ready to take your new or renew your membership, and they would love to hear from you. Joan, thank you again, like Cheryl was saying, for your service there doing Juneau Afternoon. What were some highlights from your show today?
Oh, man, it was a great show. I was just talking with Cheryl just a little bit ago. Anita Maynard-Losh is back directing Treasure Island
right.
from the arena stage where she works now. Been there for 10 years. And she was talking about the community relations and how being in Juneau, that Toby, her husband, and she talk about a lot about how there's no place like Juneau. And being a host on Juneau Afternoon, I have to say, I feel like part of this community where you're all snuggled up to the radio finding out what's happening. And
right.
for me and my family and my peers, it's KTOO, and I'm just a volunteer host, and everyone says, oh, I heard your show. I can't believe how many people listen to Juneau Afternoon, that it's really mm-hmm. their lifeline about finding out what's going on here, and then it slides right into these national and international news. So it's just, it's an amazing hub of information. It's kind of the pulse. It's kind of the radio of Juneau and Southeast Alaska.
Absolutely. I like what you're saying about how it sort of blends together or braids together these wonderful national stories and wonderful local stories that we're doing and people working really hard here in the community to make Juneau just as cool as communities all over the place.
Yeah, you know, right now we've got Rosemarie Alexander, our news director, in there working with Casey Kelly. They're putting together the cast, which is going to be coming up in a half hour here. It's the 4:30 cast that we have every day, and we also have a 5 o'clock cast on KRNN. 12:30, we have a local news update, but you can also get local news all day long. Our news team has been working really hard to make sure that the website, as soon as the story is produced and ready, it's out there. It's on the website. Also, breaking news, there have been a number of incidences over this past year that as soon as the story hits, you know that you can go to the K2 website, and we're going to have information for you as it's unfolding. So that's just a service that you've come to rely on. It's something that we have prioritized as the way that people are consuming media has changed a whole lot. We know that this is your source for local news, and we've been working very hard to make sure that it's available for you in the way that you want to get it, be it over the air on the website, through social media. We have 1,000-plus friends on Facebook now who are going to Facebook and then finding their way to our website when you see a headline on Facebook that looks good to you. So all of this, what it adds up to is a whole lot of great service for you every single day, and that's why we're coming to you specifically tonight to make your contribution at 586-3636.
Absolutely. And Joan, I was wondering if you could tell me a little bit more about what you do here in the community. What keeps you busy? What drew you to doing a Juno afternoon? And what are some of your favorite programs on KTOO?
Oh, as far as my favorite programs, I'm going to start backwards. I'm going to say I love the local news. I love the news in the morning. I love the news in the evening. I've become a Juno afternoon junkie because I started doing it, and as the stories unfolded on the show that I was hosting, I had to find out more about everything else. And it's just a mixed bag of so much of some hard news and community stories, and it's just really the pulse. As my husband says, he's like, wow, that is a crazy volunteer job. Every time you come home, you want to go out and do something. You want to go see this one do this, and you want to go see this one do that. So it's really been eye-opening. And I was a journalist at the Juno Empire before, so I'm used to journalism, and I did the soft news. I did profiles of people and so on and so forth. So I'm used to this. So here it really is great 15 years later, or maybe not that many, maybe 10 years later, that it's still the heart of Juno, the people stories that keep on fascinating me, that I just am so amazed about what people are doing here and how they got here and the caliber of, I don't know, talent so
right.
much, and skills that are here in our town.
Great. If you value the same things as Joan does, give us a call right now at 586-3636 or go to ktoo.org to begin or renew your membership. And we are going to go now to All Things Considered.
This is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Alyssa Block in Washington.
And I'm Audie Cornish at the studios of NPR West in Culver City, California. We're going to kick things off this hour with All Tech Considered, because much of my focus out here this week will be tech. In a moment, I'll introduce you to a Silicon Valley company.